So
initially met and started talking about me coming back and my role being kind of like reinstated. At the time when we met, one of the things that was on my heart was I really wanted to figure out where we were going as a community and making that a part of that process. Because an apostolic person or a person who really has a heart to release and launch leaders and acknowledge those things, thank you so much. You're awesome. That's the primary focus, right? I often wonder if, like, looking back, if we, when we read the Pauline letters, Paul comes off as such a big deal, whereas that may not have been as much the case in the eyes of maybe the people. Like if Paul was coming into your town once every 2 years, once every 3 years, right, you would imagine that the prominence or the person that you saw the most would have been more popular within the context of your community. And a person getting saved right after Paul left would have no idea who Paul was. So for us, we can read the Pauline letters as Paul being the central figure because we see really where the strings of the spider webs was anchored in the church, where I wonder if we were in the first century church, I'm sure we heard his name circulated a lot and we knew he was writing letters, but would he be seen as often as we might imagine in our own heads, I guess is my point. And so to me, an apostolic person is someone who is about the development of the church and the community and is more concerned with the overarching development than really, am I the person doing it, saying it, or whatever? Is it just being done? Right? Like, and I think the strength of that role is more about what the vision and the goal is and leaders being established for the work of ministry. And that's the whole point of the fivefold. But realistically, when we all met, I said, then what's our plan? If, like, I'm coming in this apostolic role, then what's our plan? Where are we going? What are we doing? How are we going to get there? When do we want to get there? What are the cultural structures we need for it? Like, what are our core values? What are, like, that's where I'm overwhelming people. They're like, please stop. You've literally been back for 15 minutes, and I'm already overwhelmed now. And so we spent some time praying and meeting together and kind of moving towards, you know, answering some of those key questions and really going into where we wanted to be and where we wanted it, what we thought the church was called to. None of it, for those of you who have been a part of our community, it's not going to be anything you haven't like heard of or been a part of before. Or if you've been a part of City of Refuge, you already know kind of what our core values are. But I recognize for those of you who it's been a while since you've been a part of our community, then, or if you're newer in the last 8 months to a year, maybe, probably you too. Candy's like, that maybe you haven't heard like our core values really talked about. So those were all that's where like Chris got the idea of creating the survey, right? Like that's where that came from. It was like, what are the needs that our community has and how do we respond to them? And where do we want to be by the end of the year? And where do we want to be in 5 years? Like it was all kind of defining that. And so today I want to talk about something. So, I really enjoy, and you guys have often heard me refer to the story of Joseph. I really enjoy the story of Joseph because it is, like, to me, the most left-field story of God accomplishing a dream. Like, it's just, like, it starts off really good, and it gets so bad. Like, so bad so quickly. And you're just, like, how is this ever gonna, like, even resolve, right? Like, I remember reading it for the first time, and I'm like, and I didn't know much. Like, to me, Joseph was such a minor character. I had never heard of Joseph in the Technicolor dream coat. Wasn't that a movie or something? Like a play. Yeah, I knew nothing of coats. Like, I didn't know any of that stuff. And I remember, like, knowing very little about this character, but knowing, like, yeah, I remember this guy, Joseph, supposed to be, like, I don't know, a big heavy hitter or something, right? And so when the dream thing starts, I was like, oh, cool, yeah, he's got a vision. He's seeing sort of where his life is going. And as it progresses, it's like, well, that's not it. That's not it. That's not it. This kid's cursed. Like, he's got, like, the worst string of luck. And then suddenly it's like, victory, you know? Like, he just sort of comes out at the other end. But Joseph, to me, is such a symbolic venture of vision being set before a person and the discovery of that journey. At the beginning of his life, Joseph identifies a vision. He not only identifies a vision, but he even declares it and tells people about it. For many of us who have a vision, and you might think of like a promise or something God gave you, a dream God gave you, you know, whatever, it comes to you personally or through someone, and then there comes a point where we begin to share it with other people, which is really a stepping out in faith, right? Because we become accountable to the people we tell. Wasn't there a thing you wanted to do? Weren't you talking about a thing, right? We run the risk of being a talker. Like, yeah, they have a vision or a dream every other week, you know, but it is sort of like a stepping out in faith. It's sort of a declaration. And you see the story of Joseph as a teenager in the beginning having a vision or having an idea, right? So if you guys will close your eyes for a second and think of a dream or a vision that you guys have had. Let's make this personal. Like, it can be big, you know, oh my God, I'm going to be a rock star. You know, it could be small. It could just be like, God promised to do this thing in my life. Can you visually see it? Like, can you picture the colors, the sounds, the smell, the whatever that pertains to that, right? Can you picture the end where you want to land, where you feel God's calling you to? All right, good. So hold that thought. So Joseph comes forward, tells his dad, hey, had this vision. I'm carrying authority. You know, you and my brothers all bow to me, and I'm the one who sustains you guys, right? It's a shocking, dramatic declaration because he's challenging the culture. He's saying, me as the youngest am going to be the one that sustains you guys, right? But that's always like the marker of a vision often is that it kind of flips things upside down and it changes it into bringing it outside the norm, right? And so Joseph starts and he has this thing, declares his vision, he meets opposition and he gets thrown into a pit, right? It's almost like the second, you know, marker of any vision is opposition, right? I mean, the guy literally gets betrayed and thrown into a literal pit, right? Imagine what that pit's like, right? Dirty, damp, right? Did he break his fall, right, on the way down? Was he lower down? Was he just like, right? Did it smell bad? Like, I imagine the experience. He's looking up at the sky, right? Limited vision, not knowing what's up there, not knowing if he's going to have food or anything like that. Like, you guys might be experiencing a pit in your life, you know? Like, I remember for a period of time, like, feeling like I was in a pit and going, I don't feel like there's anything I can do to resolve this situation. Like, I am just sitting in this pit, you know, just replaying the events of what just how I got here, right? And nowhere in that experience, right, or in the experience you guys might be having right now. So let's take a second to close our eyes. And we just took a second to envision our vision. Let's envision our pit. What's the obstacle? What's the struggle? What's the issue that stands in the way? What's it look like? What's it smell like? What's it sound like? What's it feel like? And how real that feels when we think about it. How overwhelmed the anxiety, you might take stock of your body right now. Is your blood pressure elevated? Is anxiety kind of rising? Is your breath getting more and more shallow? So Joseph's in this pit, and he's sitting in there, and he doesn't know what's going to happen next. And nowhere in this process is he considering that this pit is going to be the very thing that's going to launch him into his dream. I mean, pause and consider how this story plays out. We're used to it, so we've heard it a million times. He gets thrown into a pit, and near that pit, his brothers are sitting together eating, and a caravan comes through. What a lot of people don't realize is in the area that they're in, there were these caravans that would come through. It was a highway trade where, like, all these traders would come down, like streams of trader would come down through that area, and they would pass from Syria through Israel to get to Egypt. And that story, it even talks about how these guys are, these Ishmaelites come through, and they're traders, and they're on their way to go to trade their goods down in Egypt. Serendipitous, right? Like, of all pits to be thrown into, this is the one that's going to get him a free ride down to Egypt, right? He gets sold into slavery. None of this sounds good at all, right? So he gets sold into slavery. Guy goes down to serve down in Egypt. But he could have been thrown into a pit where it's someone going north, right? Or into a pit where there's no one around, right? And he gets thrown into a pit, and his brothers come across these traders that are traveling through the area, who are going down to the very place that he needs to be established. And then here's like the big opposition. Then he faces this accusation with living in Potiphar's house. And of all prisons to be thrown into, he gets thrown into Pharaoh's prison. Right? Of all the jails to be in, the one where he's going to get to access the people who hang around with Pharaoh. Right? Like, None of these things, I'd imagine, sound like pluses. Like, they're always like, but it's in that very place where we struggle or we're stressed, where there's that tug of war, we're trying to figure out where we're going, what we're doing, how we're going to do it, we're meeting opposition. It's in that place where we're able to establish the joy of the Lord in peace and recognize. And to me, like, the most encouraging question that I had for myself was where the strength lied in the process for me. So for me, I kept saying over and over in my own head, this is not at all what I thought this was going to look like. And it was a sad kind of thing. It was like a mourning song. Like, oh my God, this is not at all where I thought my life was going to lead. This is not, it was like, oh my, right? And then when God began to do a lot of work in my heart, it became like a thing of praise. This isn't what it's supposed to look like. This can't be it. Right? Like, it suddenly became like, yeah, like, really that, like, sort of change that transformation, because if what we saw in the beginning isn't what we're seeing now or experiencing now, then we're assured that what we're seeing now is only temporary. Right? If the vision God gave us or the dream God gave us isn't what we're experiencing right now, then we know that what we're experiencing right now is temporary and it will pass, good or bad. Right? And what we can do is anchor ourselves in that connection with God, in that relationship with God, in that breakthrough. One of my favorite stories is, like, it was a story I heard by John Mark McMillan, who wrote How He Loves Us, and is in check. And we're back. Thank you, listeners. Please donate online too. and check out our merch page for a nice guy shirts. Smash that subscribe button. So he does this whole thing, right? And he says he goes through the season in his life where he's, everywhere he goes, he has to play that song. You're that guy. You're the How He Loves Us guy. We want that experience recreated in our church. And so he's like, suddenly I'm the guy who's supposed to do this thing. And he goes, we try to put out new music in the same vein of the style we were used to before, and each album's a flop. And it's okay. Like, it's not what we want it to be. And he's like, and I remember when I got married, he's like, someone had given us a check for $5,000. And I told my wife when we deposit the money that if we ever get to the place where we have to touch that money, that I'll quit touring and I'll come home and get a job. He goes, so he's like, I'm struggling to pay the bills, pay my band, pay whatever. I decide to come home. And I'm just overwhelmed, and I keep trying to get this music thing going. And he says, and one day I get a call from my band members, and they're all quitting the band. And he goes, I remember going to bed that night, and he says, I remember thinking, I don't have a band. And he's like, and it was a sad, like, I don't have a band. And then he woke up the next morning, and it was like, I don't have a band. I don't need to share creative ideas with other people. I don't need to compromise on how I want these songs to sound like. I can do my own thing. So he hires a ridiculous amount of musicians, so I can see some common threads between him and I. And his next album, Borderlands, features a saxophone player, violinist, and he just, like, goes wild. Like, he creates this, which has rocketed him into his new sound, and he's been blowing up. Him and his wife have been going on tour left and right, and he has a completely different sound than what he did before, and a different idea on what he looks like. And he describes, like, in this pit, I had this question that sounded like a mourning like a morning song. Like it was this terrible like reality of my experience that really became the thing that God rectified. And it could only happen in that place of disappointment. It's only in that place of frustration when we have a vision, where we have an idea, where we feel stuck. It's in that rut. It's in that silence, right? A lot of people describe like not hearing God when he asks a question. And to me, I always wondered if that was like the number one moniker of what people had against God was like, well, I asked God to do this and I got silence in return. And I find silence now to be the most enduring, most powerful experience you can have. Because it is in the silence where you can hear your own voice. And it is in the silence where you're able to face your own insecurity. I think that is the incredible wisdom of Jesus going out into the desert before going out into ministry, is he was alone for 40 days by himself. And it was only a matter of time before the devil showed up. And he's like, all right, the showdown I was looking for. You know, and it's only when he faces the devil and he's able to answer these questions that are thrown at him, these challenges, and he can settle those things in himself, that he comes back and launches his ministry. And I think for so many of us, it's the exact opposite. We're encouraged to come straight out of high school, college, into the vision and the dream. And then we serve a God that's trying to lead us into the desert. And he's like, hey, I want you in that silence. I want you to sit uncomfortable. I want you to see other people succeed. I want you to see your enemies succeed. I want you to hear them talk trash about you. I want rumors to circulate about you. How do you feel right now? Having a panic attack. Like, can't breathe. Like, I can't do this. And he's like, okay, sit a little bit longer. And it's just like, and it's in that place of like, let it all come out, buddy. Like we're going to face this thing and we're going to, and it's in those places that I think our fears, our insecurities begin to reflect a different side of what our story will be. You know, I love how Joseph tells the cupbearer that's going to be restored back to Pharaoh, hey, don't forget me when he reestablishes you, right? Like he's throwing a lifeline, like, oh, I need to get out of here. And he's probably just thinking, I just need to be free so I can go home. I don't want to live in Egypt anymore. This has been a bad experience, right? And the guy forgot. And it's not until God sends a dream to Pharaoh that troubles him. And it wasn't just one dream. It had to be two, right? And it couldn't just be he had two bad dreams and he says, surely we can find someone in prison that can help me. It had to be two really bad dreams. And then he had to spread throughout the kingdom. Anyone, can anybody help me? Nothing, nothing, nothing. Anybody, does anybody know anyone that can help me? Nothing, nothing. And then after months and months, finally, oh, God, I know a guy. I mean, I did know a guy. Like, he could be dead by now. I should have remembered him. Like, I mean, it's like through this, and I could only imagine he's like, please, pick me, coach, put me in the game, right? Like, it's that experience, right? That dream's still there, right? And we carry it because we're waiting for it to look like what it will be at the end. And what I absolutely love about Joseph's story is that it doesn't end in just victory. He still has to face his accusers. He still has to face his family. Right? Like, and to me, it's like the perfect archetype for us as a people to navigate our individual dreams, to take a sense of responsibility for them, to take a sense of like, I carry this and I'm responsible for it and I have to believe for it and to face those trials that no one else can for you and to come out more powerful in our character and our development and see every pit and every setback, not as just like a sign of why we shouldn't do it, but the exact opposite as being the encouragement why we should. But the character development has to be there, right? We still have to face the insecurity. We still have to face the questioning. We still have to face. And I want that to become personalized to you guys. I want you guys to pause because God really dispenses gifts to each of us and has released us into a powerful kingdom. And we either undervalue what he's given to us, right? Or we overvalue it, undervalue the character that we need to have to sustain it, right? But somewhere in that journey, the whole process is to get us there for the sake of his glory, right? Joseph being elevated as a second ruler of Egypt was to sustain God's vision of developing a people and protecting them so that they can thrive. And he understood that about the vision from the beginning. While he acknowledged, yeah, you guys are bowing down to me, he acknowledged, I would be sustaining you. It would be my role. And he can set aside his personal anger and frustration for that sake. And he can recognize where he's angry and kind of sort of go through that process. And so for me, I just as we talk about what our plans are for the end of the year and where we want to land as a community and where we want to go, I want it to be personal to you guys of where you want to go and where you want to land. because a long time ago, we talked about as a community as being a place that can acknowledge and recognize people's dreams and releasing them into those dreams, and that we had to be okay that some people were going to call this place home and some people weren't, and that it would be for a season for some and it would be forever for others, and that for the sake of seeing ships come into the harbor and repairing those ships and putting, you know, putting trade goods on those ships, whatever is needed so we can release people, it's been our heart to say, hey, what's your story? Who are you guys? Like, where? What do you guys want to be? The term we've been kind of using, which was shared to us, was the idea of family on a mission. We don't want to just do community for the sake of community. There's a mission involved, right? And I think in the past, I will definitely say, like, we often have kind of stuck together out of trauma, or we've stuck together out of just, like, family, right? Rather than, like, no, like, there's a goal, right? Like, we don't want to be the church sitting in Israel waiting for Jesus to come back, right? And the diaspora has to happen so that, like, no, go into all the nations and spread the gospel and the good news. Don't just stay in Jerusalem, right? Like, it really fulfills that purpose, right? And so we have that heart of, like, hey, we want to be family on a mission. We want to create space for people to find community, to find connection, to build relationships, for ties to be developed. But we also recognize that we want to accomplish something. There's an express purpose. So to that end, over the next several months, we want to cover three specific topics. We want to cover, one, spiritual gifts. Two, worship, and then three, community, but I'm going to explain the community part in just a second. So spiritual gifts. When we shared the whole idea of the fivefold ministry, to us, the fivefold ministry from the very beginning was supposed to be just a foundation in which we build the house. To me, it's always about the spiritual gifts. Realistically, like, we use the construct of the fivefold ministry, again, just as a platform in which the thing is the product. The thing is, like, the people, right? So to me, a church is going to be filled with tons of people with spiritual gifts and maybe a handful of people that are called to the fivefold. But the spiritual gifts people are really the ones doing the work, where the fivefold are just the teachers in the school that are equipping the people, right? Like, when we think of, like, our high school years, sure, we might think of the people that influenced our lives, but it's about getting you to graduate. Like, it's about setting you out into the world so you can go and complete the things that, you know, you have a heart for. So we want to spend the next, you know, however long it takes, couple of months, just kind of covering spiritual gifts and looking at assessments. We're going to be doing this in a couple of ways. Way one is we're going to cover some of that here on Saturday nights. And then Chris is going to, as soon as he's done with John, the book of John, James is sent. As soon as he's done with that is when we're going to start the spiritual gifts portion of all this. And he's going to dedicate his Bible study time to some of those assessments to meet with you guys and cover some of that stuff. That way, whatever we can't do on a Saturday night, if we have a lot of people and it's just difficult to go back and forth, Chris will kind of handle some of that, you know, assessment taking, that kind of thing. So we're gonna look at a lot of materials because we want to do two things. We want to, A, not just share where we stand and what we believe that's familiar to us, but we also want to explore some new ideas and some new ways to kind of, like, look at things. Because we recognize, like, something like the gift of wisdom or the gift of knowledge could look differently in people. And we just want to be fair to those gifts. Like, I'll be honest, like, the example we used in our group meeting was we could spend a whole day talking about the prophetic gifting. As a matter of fact, guys like Sean Bowles, who are prophetic guys, have a 9-week series on what, like, prophetic ministry is. But then it's like, what's interpretation of tongues? You interpret it. Next, you know, like, but that's because I don't do that one. So to me, it's going to feel that simple. But if we're connected with someone who really understands that, or if we can come across material that could really expound on that, so we can equip someone who has that particular gifting. That might be an example of, like, do you know someone? I feel like Rachel's like, I know someone. Call them right now. Sure. We're totally open to that, yeah. Our hope is to really put out the gifts, not only display them, show them, cultivate them, give opportunity for them, Because when we get to the end of a lot of these spiritual gifts assessments and all of this stuff, and we just, and again, these are just to give you guys a space to kind of discover what you're called to, and it might look differently for you than it would another person, is that at the end of it is we want you guys to use our services here as well as whatever we do in the community as an opportunity to practice that. And we want to create the space for that, you know. If more people are called to teach, you know, we want to do that. But we also want to expand even, and I don't know what this would look like, but our service, the way our service is structured, because just as an example, it's like, I think it's awesome, absolutely think it's awesome, that three things we do on Saturday nights is we do worship, we do the word, and then we do some kind of fellowship communion. I think that's awesome, truly. I want to keep doing that. But I also wonder, like, what are other things we can develop in that process, other things that can really kick in. Some churches are really big in the supernatural. Like, I'm cool with that so long as it's authentic. Like, I'm down. It's just got to be real. It can't be like you're shoving my head back and I have to, like, courtesy drop. I don't want to do that. Like, but for, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I realize, like, I can be, in my theology, I'm all over it. In my practice, I'm conservative, you know? So to us, we recognize it's a growing experience for us too, you know? And I can see it when I'm traveling with people that do the supernatural all the time, and I'm the one sitting in the corner like, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't want to, like, you do it, I'll write it down and record it. I don't want to, I'll put it on Instagram. Like, I don't want to be the guy to do it. But I recognize that's because I'm uncomfortable. I've seen it done poorly, and it gets weird for me. But I know I need to be stretched. So, like, I'm okay. I mean, I think it was last year we had someone come preach on speaking in tongues, and they believe, like, the evidence of the gifts of the Spirit is that you speak in tongues and everyone should speak in tongues. And I remember I was like, wow, that's okay. Like, that's an opinion. That is, I hear you. Yeah, I'll hand that out. Thanks, buddy. And I remember hearing that. I remember feeling extremely uncomfortable hearing that. But when I sat down with the guy, I'm like, just hit me with what you got. Like, he walked me through scripture, and I at least walked away, I get where he was coming from. I was like, I could see where you landed there. Now, Laura's laughing because I went way more than that. I then gathered a bunch of people at my house, and I was like, look at what I was told. I think I'm being convinced. I meant war. And then I spoke on it, and I was like, I think I believe something now. Because I'm like, I'm willing to hear the guy. And so I say that because I'm okay with being going along that journey through nine gifts. You know, like, bringing people in. And we want you guys to walk in the full expression of those things. That, like, for me, that's my heart, equipping and the releasing of the saints. And it is about you guys. It is that the expression of our community would be as people walk in, we're here to do work. We're here to connect. We're here to love on God. But we're here to serve one another. And there can be people who are encouragers that who can encourage. There are people who are influenced who can influence. There are people who can prophesy. And that becomes a normal part of our community. And that's just an example of some of, like, those type of things. So we're going to do that with spiritual gifts. We're also going to do cover the topic of worship. Sounds straightforward, right? No, it's not. So we recognize, like, so we recognize that both, I mean, when you really realize scripturally, especially in the Old Testament, the idea, I think it's God just really encouraging what I have to say. I felt he said something different, so I felt like he was being my hype man, and he was like, keep going, but that's fine, I get it. If it does it again, we can just shut it off, shut the...